Roxy, you sent me that song, Requiem for a Master Mason. Now, when you contemplate McLuhan and Zappa and the rest of the chart, isn't that the appropriate muzak for the chart, for the emotion that a full comprehension of the chart arrives at?
Yes.
Yes, that is that is the emotion.
The crown of frequencies.
Yes, and it's life and death, death in life. So it's a triumphant wake, requiem. Doesn't that mean like past tense, the guy's gone, funeral for the Master Mason? Is that what requiem means?
Yes, there was a mystery man commissioning some work from Mozart at the end of his life, and there are many theories that he was like a Master Mason,
right?
A big initiated.
So Mozart named the composition Requiem for a Master Mason. That's what he called it.
No, it's called Lacrimosa.
Yeah.
Lacrimosa. It's the tears are the lacrimas.
Oh, okay. Yes, tears.
So it's,
and so the history, or you're calling it that, Requiem for a Master Mason, to tell me what it's about, what's behind it.
No, it's called like that.
Sometimes. But Mozart didn't do it.
Yeah.
He didn't call it that.
Some people say this work was commissioned by a mystery man that was a high master.
Okay.
And
so,
if you see it, it's in a tempo of 3 beats, 1, 2, 3. La, lacrimosa.
Yes.
Dun, 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 dun. Like 1, 2, 3. And they say this is the 33.
Right.
Number.
That's just pure bit of that again.
Imbued in music.
I heard that. I heard your counting.
Yes.
So.
Yes. Yeah, so, Mozart, like all Masons, would put things in his music, on the lyrics and the symbols.
Yeah.
For those who knew, those who have eyes and ears to see.
How old were you when you first heard that?
I'm not sure, but it's known that Mozart was a Mason.
Oh, yeah, I know that. But I'm asking, did you have classical music played in your home?
Yes, because I studied violin when I was a child.
So your mother would play it, or you would play it?
Everybody would play it. Yeah.
So you had
my mother likes opera, so I heard a lot of opera.
And so was that going on all hours of the day?
No, not the hours, but...
Afternoon?
Yes.
Evening? When you came home?
Oh, at different times during the day, yes.
Yeah. Is there a big opera, Met-like operation in Mexico City? Do they have a big symphony orchestra?
Yes, but not as big as here. I mean, compared to the tradition in Europe, it's really nothing.
They just don't...
In Berlin, they still have several opera houses and and the tradition of,
yeah,
for example, Wagner and,
right,
and this opera's last 8 hours, 6 hours.
Yes.
That they have double orchestras.
Have you ever heard of the conductor Furt Wangler? F-U-R-T-W-A-N-G-L-E-R? Furt Wangler. Back in World War II. He was, I think he was suppressed by the Nazis. He's a big hero of LaRouche. Furt Wangler. I think I'm saying it right. Furt Wangler. But, so they don't have a big deal symphony orchestra in Mexico City.
Yeah, there are different orchestras.
Mm-hmm.
But it's, I really think, compared to what I hear here in the Philharmonie, it's really another level.
So they, you're saying you get the greater simulation in Berlin from history?
Yes.
That people are more drenched with it or something? Or do they get the, do they buy the best around the world and they come to Britain? I mean,
yes.
Berlin. Right. Look at this. Alyssa says, that Requiem does capture the wordless frequency. That Requiem does capture the wordless frequency. And then Susanna says, Requiem, a Christian service, she's giving the definition, a Christian service for a dead person. Okay, so we got, if you take the magnitude of McLuhan and the magnitude of Zappa, and you put them together, that communicates the magnitude of Iandam without sounding like a New Age airhead repeating cosmic debris. That's your thesis, which I agree with. The triumphant...
Yes, because, the thing is how to confront this non-physical and talk about this.
Yeah.
Without sounding like a New Age, like a cult, like crazy people.
Put your microphone a little bit perfect. Make your microphone perfectly positioned so we don't get the blur.
Yes, I think...
Yeah, that's better.
It's not an easy task, and in a way you were preparing for many years for the task of,
yes,
of explaining the non-physical, confronting the non-physical. And
how do you talk about
it? Yes, first to recognize it. You were already consulting the evergreens.
I was talking to all the dead people of history, just like Ulysses. Remember, Ulysses goes to Circe and he goes down into the Hades or the dead people land and he talks to a lot of them. I was doing that for years.
Yes, but according to the science, there is no real death. So they're just, like I said, they transition to a parallel world or to another, I don't know.
No, they go to the gut. It's different now. What you're describing is what's happening now. But traditionally, we did go to the gut, Ian says. And not everybody got there because they had to judge themselves worthy of it. And since there was no time, the judgment process could go on for millions of years, even though there was no time. It's just that if you weren't doing it, you weren't there. And if you did do it and accepted yourself to pass the judgment, you'd be there. Now, I've brought Kim in. Kim, I'd like you to supplement what we're saying. I think you're qualified to express the frequencies that we're trying to talk about. How did this, having come from a religious background, how do you talk about the real message of the revelation, the Bible, Book of Revelation, without being cliche, familiar, or sounding like a cult? That's the question before us, Kim. We have brought together this committee to investigate this question. The committee so far consists of me, Roxy, and you. You, Kim. It's like jury duty. You have to attend. Are you even there? Your name's there, but you're not speaking. I think you're on mute. We're getting the little red little red marker, but we don't hear anything. Well, we can't be distracted by people who show up late. Back to what we're saying, Roxy. So if you take someone with the power of Zappa, it's a shocking, challenging music. It satisfies the request for sophistication, yet it oscillates to simplicity. Was back and forth all the time, having a sense of humor about it. So, as LaRouche says, all great art has a great joke underlying it. There's a sense of a great joke in Zappa's music. Then, you got the same thing in McLuhan, a grandiose sweep of all social mortar knowledge, ending up with the perfect statement, the summation of all sociological, historical, psychological, archetypal, chemical meaning, the truism of little man's social life, the medium is the message. And it can even refer to ion as the original medium, source energy.
Yes, we were talking about this phrase, how this phrase summarizes the whole of history of humanity since the fall.
Yes.
It's all about this evolution of different mediums.
Yeah.
Bring the message. Ion at the beginning was using this phrase a lot, but he will make a pun on it. He will say the medium is the large.
Yes, JW is a large, not a medium. The large was the message. And part of us realizing what ion's about through the years was realizing the depth of the largeness of ion. You can swallow up the whole cloud and create an alternative cloud. That's pretty large or pretty tiny, either way. It's extreme. And Zappa has a large vision. He announces that...
Complete meaning of the phrase.
The completing?
Like we were talking about in the Frank Zappa session that many artists were doing things, expressing things without fully being aware of what they were expressing.
Right.
And McLuhan, when he said the medium is the message, maybe he was not aware that the actual meaning was about ion.
Yeah.
Ion is the message, the goal we were seeking through all this exploration of different mediums, of all these... art, all these creations, all these technologies.
All these sciences.
It was all until we found the large.
Yes. So
the large.
You can't go around saying the medium is the message and just repeating it like a zombie. So, like recently I posted 54 quotations on a Marshall McLuhan forum. If you go through those 54 quotes, it covers a lot of territory, and it is the point, the punchline is the medium is the message, but he covers all of the history of knowledge on your way to summarizing with the phrase the medium is the message. So you learn all these other aspects of social mortar by reading McLuhan. It's a polymath, encyclopedic situation. The same with sound. You realize with Zappa the history of sound and music while coming to some singularity of what he was achieving with his music, which he said that the content of his albums were not the message. The message was something you couldn't hear. Now, that's pretty crazy to say that. But he did it. He knew he had to take it a lot further than anybody done it before. Now, I played, do you know Hymnim or Hymnin by Stockhausen? Have you ever heard that much?
Yes.
So I played it a little earlier. This is being made the same time as Lumpy Gravy. And it's quite an interesting collage he makes.
Yes, because we were speaking about the folklore. And
the folklore, yeah.
He retrieves all these national anthems.
Yes. Group mind in the 20th century. Archetypes of the group mind.
And he does like Zappa remixing.
Yes, yeah.
Of the whole tracks to create a new song, a new piece.
Right. They used to say that McLuhan was not original, not an original thinker. They said Zappa was not an original creator. But they both created an original response to the world. And if anything's original, it's Ion. So you couldn't be a cliche version of originality. They weren't going to do that. They had the guts to let the mortar swirl around them, and then they sculpted it. Musically or literary.
Because I think they were both aware of the conceptual continuity of all creations.
Yeah.
That all was part of a big
big creation. Note. Big note?
Yes, it's all the outerings at the end.
Yes.
Are one.
The uttering.
And that's what Joyce is saying also with the Finnegan's Wake.
Yes.
All of history, all of technologies, everything is just one big creation.
And it's inaudible, invisible, and what's another one? Inaudible, invisible, ungraspable. Yet fully present to you. Ever had that experience? Invisible, inaudible, but fully present to you.
Well.
What'd you say?
Yeah.
You say no? No.
We sort of have an impression of this big note.
Yes.
This big creation. That maybe when we have the all-knowing experience, that's when we are going to get this experience that you're talking about.
Yes.
Everything at once.
Listen to this. This is when you say the word knowing, this is what I'm reminded of. Let's see. Got to go over here. William Irwin Thompson goes through the five phases of mortar. Can't say it's linear history, but bringing it up here. He says that in the beginning, a fake beginning, where shamanism ruled, and it tended to be a matriarchy, the victim was the animal. And the mode of consciousness was a trance on a spectrum between the unconscious and the conscious. So Thompson makes a spectrum. You have the unconscious on the left and conscious on the right, and a line joining them, and in the middle is trance. So trance was in between. That's what normal consciousness would be, a kind of a hypnosis. You're walking around and you could fall back into your unconscious where you go to some kind of knowing or a sense of consciousness, but the normal condition in between was trance. Then later, as they got more into agriculture, it became, on the left, dismemberment, and on the right, incarnation, and in the middle was sacrifice. So sacrifice was the condition that mediated dismemberment. In matriarchal societies, they did a lot of sacrifice, or you would move to an individuated beginning of a kind of constant personality, even though we wouldn't call it personality. But you go between dismemberment and incarnation, and the in-between space is sacrifice. Then you move into
For example, in the cultures of Mesoamerica, what we now call Mexico and Central America.
Yeah, you said Mesoamerica?
There was a lot
Did you say Meso? M-E-S-O.
Mesoamerica.
Yeah, M-E-S-O, Mesoamerica, right?
Yeah,
that's what Thompson calls it. Yeah, go ahead.
These cultures did a lot of human sacrifice, but there was the knowing that there is no real death.
Right.
So it was actually not like a big deal.
Did you hear what Ion said many months ago? That the ritual was that you could open up someone's heart or open up their chest, pull out the heart, and put it back in, and the person wasn't affected at all by it, didn't die. They were...
Whoa.
Yeah. That's pretty spooky scenario, but that's what Ian said. I guess you didn't hear that. You weren't to hear that day. The actual demonstration was that you could survive someone plunging through your chest, grabbing your heart and pulling it out and holding it up, and then putting it back in you. I don't know how they had reattached it, but that was what the demonstration was. What do you think of that? Well, you've already expressed that. That's a woo. And that's, there are different theories about why they were doing these sacrifices, from, you know, the most crude reasons to some kind of proving that there's no fear of death. But this Ionic version is original. They showed that they could pull out someone's heart. I mean, I guess they were an ascended person. And then put it back in. It didn't bother them. So, you now have that to tell your mother about.
Yes, because another of the reasons was, for example, they did a lot of bloodletting to have visions.
Yes.
That was another type of sacrifice, to let a lot of blood go out. Because the theory is that the brain secretes a lot of substances that make you have some type of hallucination, and maybe they did some parallel world as they were doing this, because there's a lot of representations of humans going inside like a serpent and seeing something.
Okay, so back to this pattern. So the third level, you have unconscious and conscious, and in between is trance. Then later you have dismemberment dismemberment and incarnation and sacrifice in between the two. Then you have, in the civilization phase, you have belief and doctrine on the left, the individuated ego, I think it was. Yes, individuated ego on the right. And in between, the mediator position, is faith. So you started off in the earliest level, you had trance, then it became, you kept forgetting the second one, dismemberment, incarnation, and what was in the middle? Sacrifice. Then in the third level, you've got, on the left, you've got belief and doctrine. And on the other side, moving towards an individuated ego, and in between is faith. Then you come to the industrial level society, and you have, what did you have on the left? Collective knowledge. So beginning of learning printed book contents, sociology, philosophy, psychology, chemistry, geology, astronomy, all those things, collective knowledge. And on the left side of the spectrum, on the right side of the spectrum, you have solitary genius. So you have this oscillation between collective knowledge and solitary genius, and what's in between is knowing. The compromise is knowing in between collective knowledge and solitary genius. So then you come into the present world, what Thompson called the bios. Or what's another one? Enantiomorphia, that's a special name. Or the complex dynamical. So all these different names, including, I don't know if I said, the biospheric. So in this present stage, what would be the spectrum? He has, on the left, Ahriman, A-H-R-I-M-A-N, which is a kind of a global FEMA camp, a global concentration camp. And then on the far right, you have Christ. You have Lucifer. So in between Ahriman and Lucifer is Christ. He's the mediator between the Ahriman and the Lucifer. So you go back these five levels. You've got trance mediating unconscious and consciousness. Then you have sacrifice mediating dismemberment and incarnation. Then you have faith mediating belief in doctrine. And what was it? Belief in doctrine and individuated ego. Then the fourth level, knowing, mediating collective knowledge and the solitary genius. Then you come to the present. You have the ascended condition, Christ, mediating the global death camp, the Ahriman, and the tyrannical meanie known as Lucifer. So, I wanted to lay those five out because something we said talking about Mozart and
the knowing.
Yeah. Oh, did I? Well, the knowing is in the industrial.
The knowing.
Yeah, you said the word knowing, right? That and so then I said, okay, I'm going to position knowing is in the industrial phase. I think I forgot. No, I forgot something. The planetary phase has two spectrums. You got Ahriman and Lucifer mediated by Christ. But the other one was noise on the left and rapture on the right mediated by participation. So Thompson, picking up from McLuhan, that people are not citizens with detached points of view anymore. They're the dithyrambic spectator or the participating subject. Everybody's a subject. So this participation involvement, like we were witnessing in the elections this year, is the compromise between noise, overwhelming noise, and rapture. So that's the planetary phase that goes along with Ahriman and Lucifer, mediated by Christ. So you see, knowing is one phase back. So I think it's interesting that Thompson puts it one phase back. It's more of a participation and another level. Knowing implies mind. So mind is not in the fifth level. It's participation and Christ ascension qualities.
Yes, I think maybe because until now, all the things we call religion or spirituality, the mystery landscape, were associated with faith and believing.
Yes.
But now we are arriving at a point where we're going to know for sure.
Right. A belief is a thought you've been thinking a long time. And the slower the society is, the longer the thoughts stay. and become belief. Many people don't have time to even form a thought, so they can't form a belief, and that causes anxiety. But if you look at it differently, you're actually in a very ascended condition environmentally that's not allowing you to form a mental pattern. Unless you figure out Bob knowledge, then you can start talking and using your mind. You have a language to go around it.
Yes, and in several cases, science says, okay, we're going to clean this up. This is like this.
Yeah, speak a little louder. Did you say it's going to clean it up?
Yeah, he says, we're going to clean this up.
Yes.
And then they say, it is like this.
Yeah.
And that's knowing. It's not a theory or a...
It's not what?
Hypothesis. A theory.
Not theory. Right. Not theory.
It's... It is like this. It is the knowing.
Yeah, yeah. So, so we have the, you use McLuhan and Zappa, Coker Thompson, Nate Brussel, LaRouche, as facets of looking at this deep transformation that's happening to matter and to frequencies. And you can't use any of the memes from history, religion, science, art, none of those particular artifacts are useful. The only way to present the big view, the big picture, and the big sound and the big note is to have a collage of hints from all the eras that are overlaid on each other. So when Thompson lays out those five levels I went through, they're all on top of each other, interpenetrating.
Yes.
And so you can go into any angle of it to prevent yourself from being a cliche. You hop from angle to angle.
Yes, and for example, since the beginning you had been talking about all types of topics, history, politics. Well, history, we know there is no linear history, but what we thought of history, what we thought of religion and spirituality, economy, health, all these very different topics, and the only way to sort of make sense of this soup
yeah.
is by approaching it like a median ecologist.
Yes.
Because
the figure
otherwise
ground.
It's like the Amazing Finnegan's Wake, but you read it and it might be funny, it's wonderful, it's an amazing creation, but... sometimes you say, what is the real meaning of this? What is he really saying? And I think he's already showing the ionic environment.
Yeah.
Because in the Quantum Blast, Marshall McLuhan said, Finnegan's Wake of this. James Joyce is a verbal universe in which press, movie, radio, TV merge with the languages of the world to form a playhouse of metamorphosis.
Right. Could you read that again, clear with the mic?
No,
that's a good quote.
Android meme.
It's a good quote, but I want you to read it again with your microphone position and louder. That's in Counterblast.
Get your counterblast. That's page 115.
115, okay. So say it again. He's summarizing fitting his wake.
Yes, that it's a verbal universe.
Yes.
In which all the medias, all the mediums, all the messages are mixed. All the languages are mixed in he calls Playhouse of Metamorphoses.
Yeah, the Phoenix Playhouse, of Metamorphoses. So,
yes, you know the exact.
Yes, and I have that sentence written in one of my copies of Finning's Wake, you know, on the inside first page. There is a movie put out in the 70s called Quadrophenia, not Phrenia, P-H-R-E, that's mine, but Phenia, P-H-E-N-I-A, which featured Sting before he was known as Sting, I think. Or, you know, he wasn't a famous musician yet, but they are going to remake Quadrophenia 37 years later. So what would that be? 43 years, 2019... be 40. So I guess that's 1979 it came out. And I thought that was interesting that you see that term, quadrophenia, which many people think I'm saying quadrophenia. They think I'm quoting The Who. They made an album, but I'm doing quadrophenia. So quadrophenia is the reductionist pattern of the tetrad, four parts, the fourfold pattern, to simplify the constant metamorphoses in the Phoenix Playhouse that Joyce said in that statement. So in this book, The Transforming History, I got the later edition, 2009 edition. It's shorter than the 2001, but this idea of figure ground in cultural history, cultural ecology, is how he lays out the classroom for children and teenagers. It's really an amazing book for a comprehensive education overview with the medium as the message as one of the major points. That's what the student would realize.
Yes, because he says we're retrieving all the past.
You could say we don't make past. We don't have a past now because everything's recorded, constantly being recorded, so it's all part of this cloud that has all the recordings. So we cannot experience the past. You can read a book about it and yeah, if it's not electronic, then you have the idea that, oh, this is something from another time that I can't hear. So books are the past, but they don't influence the global membrane now. What do you think of that? We don't have a past. All is recorded.
Right.
And so Ian says you allow yourself to take in more in your daily consumption of media. That's the exercise, is to how to allow yourself to take in more and become enlarged. In other words, expand your sense of the now. I remember one time Michael Blake Reed.
Marshall.
I just was going to say.
Marshall McLuhan calls this the flood.
Yes. Now, I was just going to quote McLuhan. I was talking to McLuhan through the evergreens. And when the session was over and Michael Blake Reed came out of trance, he says, holy shit, the now is way bigger than I thought it was. So he learned from that conversation, from McLuhan, that the now is not like 2 minutes ago stretching to 2 minutes from now. It's a huge, pulsating, too big to know flood. That's the now.
And now here.
Yeah, nowhere. Now here becomes nowhere. Oh, you were going to say anything?
No, I'm walking. But you guys make people feel smart just by listening to you.
Oh, that's quite a compliment. We don't make them feel less than.
Thank you, Dr. Dean.
No, just be exposed to the words and the ideas is very smart.
We create smartness.
Yeah.
I think Carolyn doesn't have the phone on, Roxy, but you just said, thank you, Dr. Dean. Is that what you just said?
Yes.
Thank you, Dr. Deed.
Okay, I'm walking. Well, I'll come back for more smartness.
Yeah, that's it. So you've been feeling smart the past half hour.
Yeah.
Because you could understand it.
Yeah.
It's learning to, you know, that's what a cosmic awareness said. I would learn how to say words appropriately.
Mm.
Well-positioned words.
Right.
That's what we're doing here.
Right. What was your tridosha?
Air, fire, water, in some order. I don't know which order it was in.
And then what was the word?
Time and eternity.
Hmm. Where did the manipulating words come in?
That's in my purpose. In a symbolic project,
right.
I would take well-chosen words and express them and have a transpersonative effect.
Oh, God.
That's the expansion you're feeling. It's a transpersonative effect.
And there you are.
Yeah, there I am.
Okay,
now
bye.
Now here. Bye. So the nowhere, now here. And you know, Samuel Butler was a 19th century writer. And his book was Nowhere written backwards, so it became Erewhon, E-R-E-W-H-O-N,
oh.
Or H-W-O-N, however you write Nowhere backwards. Have you ever heard of it, Erewhon?
No.
Yeah, and he's the guy, he figured out in the question about which came first, the chicken and the egg, he said the chicken is the egg's way of getting more eggs. That's how he resolved it. Which came first, chicken or the egg? I think they're saying that the egg came first because that led to the chicken, which then was a means to get more eggs. To this late date. But McLuhan quoted it a lot in the 60s. He thought it was significant. So what other point here? Why don't you read page 64 to everybody? Did we do that in the video?
Yes, I think at one point you do.
All right. So I'm gonna play one of the videos.
The first part is like 1 hour.
Right.
So you.
I'm not going to play an hour, but I'm going to start off, see how we get into it. So I have to go over to Facebook. They're all on my Facebook page, right?
Yes, or go to Vimeo. You can.
Oh, yeah, Vimeo. Okay. Initiation Counterblasted. That's the latest. So I'll click
yes,
on it.
The Counterblast is about, maybe...
Maybe that's the one to play. Initiation Counterblasted.
You're explaining Marshall McLuhan.
Okay, so let's try it.
His initiation of real education to...
The initiation, the new...
Extract more from the environment.
Yeah, the new Freemasonic, the new type of Freemasonry. So, got to go over to this one, make sure that sound is open. Oh, man, look at that. Let's hold that off for a second. It's nice that the recording drowns that out.
Jason, and it's very interesting that you mentioned he had 33 mediums.
Yeah, 33 chapters in part two. He has 7 themes, so there's the old traditional lucky number or cult number 7 in part one, and then 33 aspects, 33 different media. The plural of medium is media. Some people say mediums, but generally you say media for plural.
Yeah, like Latin.
Yes. So maybe I should put this in. No, I'm not going to do that. Okay, so bringing this up, making sure everything's open. Sound flower. You got to put up with some noise for a second. I got to get the video first. Taking longer. Okay, it's downloading.
You talk about a jazz historian, a cultural critic who's saying...
I'm going to go back to the beginning. I see, I haven't seen the video yet. You start off with a great design, blast human spirit. Blast those art galleries and museums which imprison and classify human spirit. And that's page 65, I see. Straight opposite the main page, okay. All right, so here we go.
Okay.
No, it went. The volume went down. Okay, just a second.
Okay, so you're talking about a jazz historian, a cultural critic who's saying jazz is not this abstract, sophisticated music. It's a folklore. But jazz is abstract, complicated, sophisticated. But it is the folklore of industrial humans, industrial man, industrial woman. The era of the mechanical bride. It's not the folklore of remote aboriginal societies or agricultural societies. So the critic fails to make the distinction. You've got to use McLuhan's knowledge to lay out the foundations for what you're going to riff on, what you're going to make a pattern on. So you could point out that jazz is the folklore for people who have automobiles and highways, traffic jams and taxi cabs and policemen and movies and telephones, industry, polluting industry, big ships, airplanes. The cacophony of that industrial society before World War II is going to make rhythms become shrill, hot, piercing, huge rhythm, huge tactile or drumming thump beats. It's going to be awesome. And it's not folklore of the agricultural kind. And I bet you the critic didn't say that.
It's the... Somebody's calling.
Oh, it's Ion calling again. Ion's always trying to get on the recordings people now. He wants to be part of them.
I have to turn off the cell phone.
Jesus.
But this is our modern jazz.
Let me see that phone. What is that? Wow.
It's
nice.
The modern sounds that pollute our environment.
It's the sounds that the young kids with their thumbs on that iPad, that's where they're getting their musical rhythms from the rhythms of the digital phone.
Yes, it's the jazz is the tribal music of the global electronic village.
The global village, not the global theater. Global theater is way more Baroque spirals than the global village. So you've got to have the high intensity of rock music, first rock and roll, and then rock. And then you get into the global membrane, and that moves into techno and eventually hip-hop. The rhythms of the global membrane, the mythic erogenous zone, is what hip-hop and rap are communicating. And it's not musical, it's not jazz, it's not the shrill beauty of jazz, it's not the industrial wank-off of rock, it is something else. It's basically yakking, talking, and trying to have your mouth keep up with the imagery in the global theater. And the global membrane. And it's an imploded thing, and everybody's forced to be a gangster to get their identity. Everybody, not just black people in the hood. So it's very much an accurate mirror of the folklore of android mean humans, or android memic society.
Yes, and like some composers were trying to translate this faster, complicated rhythm, and they had to use machines because men could not do what they wanted to compose, like Frank Zappa went to them.
Right, you could say that jazz is the folklore for industrial global village occupants. Rock is the folkloric music of the global theater era of discarnate men. And then somewhere into the global membrane and then the mythic Rajasthan would be the folklore of the android meme, where the android meme is making the music. And so that the composers have to use machines to keep up with the machine environment, the machinic environment that's come alive. Rap and hip-hop is the atavistic retrieval of the chemical body in reaction to the android meme. Now, the android meme is going to prop up the chemical body, or stimulation of the chemical body, so you will see all through rap and hip-hop the celebrations of oneself as a god. Super, super powerful ego being expressed, super powerful will. That is what the android meme does to the human being, whatever is left of the human being. It also does it to other parts of the android meme. So you could say that rap is the imitations of humans created by the android meme. That is the reason its rhythms and style of music is done that way. And it would be totally alienating for anybody who came from a previous era. It's like I am saying the millennial generation are not like any generation before. So rap music expresses this new situation, the android meme, where the music has to be unlike anything ever before. It's basically not even music as we understand it. It's basic hyper manifestation, hyper creation, using your word, your mouth, to declare your matrix hallucination.
Yes, and for example, if in the last concerts I've been attending of contemporary music, you just see the people mixing, remixing, or triggering things, but nobody's really playing. Even for some compositions with analogical instruments, they're triggered with programs. Nobody's really playing them.
Well, you know what that seems to me? Just as rap and hip-hop scratched the old analog record on the turntable, the digital thing you're talking about, with these kids and their thumbs, they're scratching whole digital landscapes. They're scratching not sound, they're scratching imagery and subatomic sounds, super civilized sounds. It's a newer, more simulated scratching, right? They're scratching.
Yes, and I think for example, for people like Frank Zappa, that make a show what they were playing, they will do other things, not only the amazing music. It will be very boring to see these people looking at the screen, sitting there, and there is not much happening, so visually.
Right. So Zappa tried to make his visuality be very expressive, very rapid. I mean, he's doing video rap before hip-hop is doing it.
But it's interesting to think about all these manifestations as a sort of folk right. Art of the urban tribe.
Say that again? Do it louder.
Yes, it's like we are still tribal.
The chemical body, the astral body, and the TV body is tribal, maybe. But the digital body is not tribal. It's tactile and self-autonomous. It makes its own empire. And that's the wonderful tactility of the android meme. You include quadriphenically tribalism, machinicism, digital autonomy, and maybe a kind of wild proprioceptive ecstasy. You know, there's more, way more than Kluin laid out now. Croker does a pretty good inventory of some of these dynamics in his writings about music. He calls it crash music.
Yes, and we started all this because of the quote on page 64 of Counterblast, Remote Folklore.
Right. So let's go into that, because on page 64 of Counterblast, I'll just, this is Counterblast 1969, he did one in 1954, so this is page 64 on the right, and this is probably the greatest one-page statement of art or aesthetic theory. It's the completion of thinking about art and perception and aesthetics for 500 years, and it comes up down to a page of huge swallowing statements. So it begins with remote folklore, remote societies. Now that would be Aboriginal societies, the Inuit, the Native, the First Nations of America, First Nations of Canada, the Aboriginal, your ancestors, the Toltecs, all these cultures. We romanticize as the ideal tactile chemical body social structure. But of course, that's not adequate for the five body structure we're in, but simple people, simple super angelic discarnate citizens will romanticize something simple like remote societies. Okay, so it says, remote folklore, remote societies are being abstracted from their matrix and enlarged by microscopic vision. So tiny little, enhancing these like tribal amoeba. Zappa calls everybody consumer amoeba. These little amoeba, these little tiny cultures, chemical body cultures, are abstracted from the android meme, which is the matrix, are being abstracted from their matrix and enlarged, made huge to become a president of the United States, like Obama. You know, a little remote guy from, where was he born? Indonesia, I think Ian says. You know, very tiny little plate thing. Now made into a huge elephantiasis of anthropomorphic structure. Okay, the next paragraph says, vivisect, and that's a very important word in James Joyce language, vivisective inspection of all modes of our own inner hyphen outer, individual hyphen social lives, that means everything, makes us acutely sensitive to all intercultural, that's hyphenated, and intermedia experience. So he's got your chemical body, he's got your social or astral body, he's got your macroscopic gesticulation of televised profiles, that would be your global theater body, and then you got your intermedia experience, that's your digital body. So even before these bodies are showing up, Kluin is including all those factors. So we inspect every little part of the stuff, and the inspection is an instant replay, a panel, a discussion, a 30-second news item. These are replays and instant inspections of all part of ourselves. So you see why in the chart you have in our previous video, self-consciousness becomes the object. Self-conscious puny is just part of the chemical body. So then science gets into analyzing the brain parts, trying to explain self-consciousness. But self-consciousness is only a subset of the multidimensional consciousness, multimedia, or you could say inner, outer, individual, social, intercultural, intermediate experience that we are actually examining every day. So no religion, no guru, no esoteric wisdom school is even remotely able to equal the high decibels of consciousness that people live by default today. Post-humans, parahumans, live all these levels and usually have to take some kind of medication to remain a sense of anchor in that situation, or become incredibly obese to get anchored. So everybody's been put into a hyper, you know, Esalen touchy-feely workshop with endless 24/7 analysis of yourself. Most people are going to faint and fall out in that situation, right?
But this is the thing with McLuhan, that he's not only these great slogans, but he's really the initiation of how to understand, digest what you're perceiving and all this information
That's right. He's offering psychological schooling, sociological schooling, anthropological schooling. He's taking whole modalities of educational disciplines and making them something that you can explore. So, and he's initiating you into how to do that. And it's available to anybody. He doesn't have to make it a secret school. He's protected. It's a secret school because it's protected by public incredulity.
But besides that, because of the multiverse situation, the part of the world, the Mr. Landscape showing itself and talking back and being self-reflective, reflective.
Yeah.
Yes, it's more than one thing. It is really a system, an education, as you say, is the real initiation on how to
have a happy life. How to have a happy life.
Yeah, to survive the maelstrom of the
maelstrom over the O.
The mystery landscape.
Oh yes, the mystery landscape.
it's really a weird situation to claim that we're talking to the non-physical.
Right. And non-physical can't even be non-physical anymore. It had to come forward and become physical and start creating. Even heaven couldn't take this onslaught. And, you know, William Irwin Thompson is pretty good at describing the different phases of heaven as it was imaged by cultural phases through the last 10,000 years. Each phase had a different image of what heaven is. All those heavens cannot hold back the flood, the breakdown of the wall between us and heaven. And so Ion has come forth to hold God. And this is totally understandable if you understand McLuhan. Once you get the depth of McLuhan and Finnegan's Wake,